Welcome to Create Your Bliss with Nika Annan. And today I have the wonderful opportunity to talk to Bola. Bola comes to us from Italy, and he is a Nepali wise person whose life has been shaped by the spirits since he was very young. Welcome, Bola.
Thank you, Nika. Good morning. How are you today?
Oh, it's a beautiful day here in New Mexico.
Great. In Italy, it is 4:15 p.m. and it's a beautiful day here also. Mm. Yes.
So Bola, tell us what you do. You say you're a wanderer, a gypsy, and you travel 8 months a year. What are you doing as you wander around the world?
Yeah, from my young age itself, I was a traveler type, and I loved going to new places and a little bit adventure kind also. And since 1997, I started traveling to the West. So in 1997, I was married with my wife. She's from Italy. And she pulled me to the wider world of the West. and my first travel to the West started with attending an international conference with the title Man and His Mystery. Oh, wow. So that was the title of the conference, and they invited me. So I came with all my shamanic objects and sacred objects and paraphernalia that have been given to me. And my first encounter with the West and to share the wisdom that has been passed by my ancestors was in Italy in 1997. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that opened the door to share the ancient wisdom in modern days context through rituals, ceremonies, and of course, creating healing space so that people can heal themselves, mm-hmm. or to create a safer space where people can play on their own. So it started that way. Then I started traveling to Northern Europe, to the US, and down to Brazil. And the process still continues today because it is not so much about teaching or sharing the wisdom of ancestors, but it is a continuous process of learning, because I live in 1 year, I live in three continents, Asia, Europe, and America. So traveling in these three continents continuously, I have seen a lot of changes.
Oh, I bet.
Yes, there are a lot of changes, and there are need of change also. And my shamanic in Nepali, we call jhakri. A shaman is called a jhakri and is also called dhami. So dhami is a mediumistic kind of shaman chosen by the ancestors, and his or her role is to communicate between the ancestors and the community. They do divination or they do prophecy. They do also healing, but not so much healing. They are more mediators between the ancestors and the community. Mm-hmm. Whereas jhakri is a person, male or female, who is a dhami, who is a medium, mediator between the ancestors and here. Plus, the person can learn the technique through the spirits or from the human teachers and can become a shaman. Mm-hmm. So there are two ways in our tradition, dhami and jhakri. So the ancestral mediumistic kind of person and the ancestral mediumistic kind of person plus the healer. So I do both. I do both in my work. So I was called by the ancestral spirit as at a young age, but it was not enough to be called by the spirits. So my grandfather molded, he saved me, he supported me in every step. And when I was molded and ready to go out into the little bit wider world, then I traveled to many places in Nepal, in India, in Bhutan, many places to find out really, to authenticate what I am called for, what I know or what I do and what others do. What are the differences and what are the similarities?
Mm-hmm.
Is really there a difference between the work that we do, if it is a cultural difference only, or there is a spiritual difference in our work? So that was my main focus, to find out what makes us different. So that really took me to travel, and I have traveled in my own country. I think I have traveled the most extensively from the mountains to foothills, down to the plain, and I have met people, very old and young people in the path. And of course, I didn't have so much time to learn, but I had opportunity to see their working ways, and my travels were supported by the work I did, because I used to prepare the herbal combination for different kinds of problems. So my budget was the backpack with the herbal medicine, and wherever I went, you know, I met the people who needed healing. So I used to give my herbal medicine and do some healing work, and that brought me some money to continue my travel. So I traveled and I worked and I shared and I learned also from the old people in different parts of Nepal. So it is how I molded my path, because the spirits, what the spirits gave, spirits awakened, spirits gave an alarm.
Mm-hmm.
They brought the call or the sense in the body, in the spirit, that something is happening through the dream reality, and in this ordinary reality also. But it was not enough. That's why a human teacher is a must. What I understood from my own path is that a human teacher is a must to mold our path. So I come from Nepal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I come from Nepal. And in Nepal, we have shamans. The term I said before, Dhami Jhakri, the terms used in different parts in a different way. And not having the medical or the conventional medical facilities,
right,
the shamans have the greatest role to play. And still today, of course, from 1996 to 2007, we had like a civil war where the Maoist insurgents in Nepal, and the Maoist insurgents, they did not allow people to do the healing or spiritual work in the villages. Not only shamans, even the Buddhist practitioners or the Hindu practitioners and all, you know, they were not allowed to practice their rites and rituals. So especially the biggest loss was in the shamanic path.
Wow.
Because many shamans either had to leave the village, or when they used to practice, they were either beaten or their things were thrown away. So many people had to leave their own place and they let their sacred things go into the river.
Oh dear.
Yes, and they so it had a it this the downfall of shamanic practice in Nepal started from 1996 with the beginning of a Maoist insurgency in the mountains. That had a great effect. And on the other hand, the good thing it did to a little extent was that when the roads were closed, when the suspension bridges were cut down by the Maoist insurgents, people had nowhere to go. So people in some places where people had forgotten their ancestral work to propitiate the ancestors or the spirits of the nature or whatever it was done before, people went back to reconnect to that tradition again. And there re-emerged the old shamanic practice in some places because there was no other way. There was no way to go. Cannot go to the town or anywhere.
Right.
So people, I think, found again the path they were that was forgotten for some time. So in Nepali context of shamanic spiritual work, people still in town like a city like Kathmandu or the Valley of Kathmandu, people first go to consult a shaman before going to the hospital, or they go to consult an astrologer, a herbalist, or a spiritual tantric practitioner, a monk, or a Brahmin priest. Then only they go to the hospital for a medical checkup. Sometimes because they would like to know what is the real cause of the problem. What is not helping feeling well? What is creating disharmony? Sometimes people first go in emergency to the hospital, then when they come back, then they go to consult the local practitioner. So we are all the time connected with our local shamans, healers, herbalists, astrologers, or the religious, we call them the temple shamans or the temple priest healers. So in the temple, a temple priest is also a healer because the temple priest is connected to a deity of the temple, and the person uses the healing power of the deity of the temple to heal the people. So in some temples, you can see the temple priest doing healing on the people. So we have all different ways of receiving healing. The traveling mendicants, like the yogis,
right.
Yogis, the travelers, and old men and old women. Because for us, an old person or a person inclined in any kind of spiritual path is a very respectable person, and their blessing is healing.
Mm-hmm.
Their blessing is healing, and their blessing is very important. A single word of comfort given even by a stranger brings healing. That's what we believe. So for us, health in Nepali context, our health is a little bit wider. So wider in the sense, good health is considered when we are in attunement with our ancestors. That's why we have so many rituals and rites every year connected to our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
We have the rites and rituals connected to the nature. So we say that a good health is when we are well attuned with our ancestors, good connection with our ancestors, with the environment where we live.
Right.
The mountains, the rivers, or the lakes, or the waterfall, or the cave, or a particular kind of tree. All these places are honored, and the keepers of this land are honored. And the other big thing we have in our tradition is the Naga. We call Nagas. Nagas, the serpent spirits. And these serpent spirits are considered to be the keepers, the owners of the land. So we have in the month of August, it falls, we have a big festival to honor the Naga deities by putting the poster above the house and bringing offering to the ponds and the water places, the keepers of the land. And then our neighbors, our relatives. So we see, we have a wider kind of, wider vision of, to when we say to feel well, is not having pain only, but to be in complete harmony with everything that is around us, from the ancestors to the coming generation. So it is quite wider. And in our daily life, we start the day in a very, very, in a very natural way, in the sense, even in the town, people go to sleep quite early. Like in Kathmandu, by 9 o'clock, 9:30, you know, you find the streets are almost bare. Of course, we have the blackout. We have many hours blackout. But even in 9:30, it is gone. People are gone. But people are already up by 4:30, quarter to five. People are already up. So first thing people do is, and the people get up, and the first thing they do is they try to take shower if there is water, because we have water problem in Kathmandu Valley since many years. So they wash themselves. And the first thing they do is they clean the utensils, the sacred objects and utensils. Then they offer water. Then they light the oil wicker. And they make the offerings and prayer. Then they go out to visit the temples or the sacred places. In this way, then they come back and have tea. So in this way, our life starts in this way. So the first thing is like to remember what dreams came through, and then to get up and to create the, to cleanse the sacred space, light the candle, make the offering, then to go out to the temples or the nearby sacred places, come back and, you know, eat and then start the work. So this is the way, you know, our life starts this way, not only in the city, but even in the countryside. We have this kind of continuous connection with the unseen, with the unseen. So
it's beautiful.
Yes, so there are different ways, you know, very short way, in a simple way, or more elaborated ways. It depends how much one can do, or how much one knows, or what is available. So this way. Now the shamans, what the shamans have to do on this? Now shamans, you know that shamans stand above any kind of institutions, religious. Yeah. Shamans stand above all. So for shamans, there is no difference between one and the other. Because the shamans work with the spiritual aspect of the deity or the god or goddess, whatever it may be. So for us, everything is sacred. Everything is important. We are connected to everything, and we don't make difference between anything. So shamans, whatever, you know that the shamans belong to different traditions, Hindus, Buddhists, or Christian, or whatever the institutions they belong to. But the people in the shamanic path, though they are brought up in under those institutions, they would not make much difference, because everything is important. Everything makes sense and meaning to them. So in Nepali context, till some years back, we had the majority of Hindu population.
Right.
80% of the people are Hindus in Nepal. And 10 to 12% are Buddhist. And the rest, we have now some Muslim population, and we have now the Christian, the Protestants and Catholics coming up. And, you know, it is all the process of change. People love to learn, to understand new things, you know. So and everything goes. And Nepal is a land where, is a country where everybody respects everyone. We have no any kind of problem with any tradition. I think it's the only country I can say in the world till today, and we hope to maintain that, that we never had any kind of problems, because people respect each other. People honor the practice, because having majority of Hindus, and then thereafter the Buddhists, you know, the most of the rites and rituals done by the Hindus have connection with Buddhists, and the Buddhist rites and rituals have Hindu stories and myths. So all of us go to each one's places. There is no demarcation between one and the other.
Yes, it's
like... it is a beautiful thing. So, you know, in Nepal, we live in poverty, but there is a richness, is enormous richness of the tradition, the culture, harmony, peace, respect. And the other beautiful thing I think people would like to know in Nepal is that people, when the Nepali people meet, they don't say, ask, how are you? They ask, did you eat? If it is meal time, if it is like tea time, they ask you, did you take your tea? People don't ask in the first round, how are you? Mm-hmm. No. They ask, did you eat? If you have eaten, that means you are doing okay.
Right.
And maybe later on they ask, how are the family and all? But when they meet the first round, they don't ask, how are you doing? They never ask. They ask, did you eat? Did you drink? They don't ask, how are you doing?
From a very different place, yes.
It's from other perspective. So if you have eaten and if you have had your tea and things, that means you are doing okay.
Life is good.
You are doing okay. Yeah. It is something like that. Yeah.
So celebrate the small things and the beauty of the small parts of life.
Beauty of the small thing. Well grounded here and now. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, the shamans have a greater role to play. We believe that they always had a great role to play. They did play. And the system survived, the shamanic system, as you know, survived with all the changes that came through the beginning of time. So in Nepali context also, when anything is wrong or anything would not look well, people go and consult a shaman. And not only for health or emotional or psychological things or the animal problem or the food crops or the weather thing, but even about the political things also, people go and try to consult with a shaman whom to cast vote.
No, it makes sense.
How
do we do this in harmony as well?
So, you know, they try to go and consult. Who is a person who has inner harmony, you know, who can do the right thing, you know? Of course, I don't know, so far maybe the things were not really good. We hope we have more clarity in the future.
Well, we try, right?
But
who knows how bad it could be?
Better guides to guide the nation. And you know now with the earthquake, you know, the 25th April, the great earthquake, then we had other disaster on 12th of May.
Right.
So now all these things, you know, of course, you know, people are suffering. There are so big problem, and I, not being there, being very far away, I also collapsed myself because
Oh, I
the
bet.
pain, you know, the suffering in our connection, our family, everything, so strong that, you know, the last earthquake really brought a, I think, big message for us to understand. Of course, we know that it's a natural phenomena, the movement of plate tectonics from the Indian subcontinent towards the Eurasian, you know, movement, and it happened. We all know about it. But when we look at the spiritual aspect, the part of what happened to it, it had a great big meaning or a message for us that we have to maybe I think we have to look at or to reconsider some of our own practices or our connection with the nature.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Tune back in. And so I think sometimes we can take for granted what we're doing and that the nature changes as well, and to keep that fresh.
Right.
And I also feel very strongly, Bola, that part of spirituality and part of being in harmony is how you deal with what's difficult. Not just creating a life where there is no difficulty, but what do you do? Because in life, sometimes things are very difficult.
Yes.
How do you do that in harmony and in tune and from the best place possible?
Right, right. It was a very difficult situation. And of course, our brothers and sisters, old and young, our children. It was this time situation in Nepal. I think it was a little bit different from what it has been happening. We have been experiencing very hard, very difficult. And it really, what the other aspect, what the earthquake did was it brought all the people together.
Mm-hmm.
It brought everyone together, big, small, old, young, rich, poor, materially, whatever it was, everyone had to be together in the tents or in the open space to share the trauma, the fear, the horror, hunger and thirst. It brought a huge change in people to share what they had. Even one handful of rice was shared between the people. And our friends from the West living in Kathmandu, they say that every time the local people, every time asked if they ate, if they had everything okay, if they need anything to do. So our people are hospitable by nature, of course. Whoever has been to Nepal, when I meet, they say, no, that's the country I would like to go back again.
Right.
So our people are hospitable and helpful. And in this situation of protecting the soul or to find a way to protect oneself, then to look at a wider space, people helped each other so much presence, so much love, so much fear, so much trauma, but everyone walked hand to hand and they prayed, they cried, they laughed, they recollected, because whatever went down has the imprint of the ancestors, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It is all done by the ancestors. The monuments, the temples, and the places of worship are created by the ancestors, you know. So, you know, losing many of those, you know, in the houses, especially in the mountain places, the houses are made out of earth and stone, you know. So earth and stone made houses. There's no cement, you know. So it was not very difficult, you know, for 7.9 Richter scale just to pull down everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, where people were born, where their grandfather was born, where their fathers were born, Those landscapes, they walked in the water fountain, they went to collect water from the childhood, the pasture land where they brought their animals to graze, the paddy fields where they went to cultivate for all these years, seeing all that, going down, pulling down everything. That brought a huge effect on the emotional, the spiritual aspect of people. So when that happened, when I started calling down there, it was so difficult to get connected because the vibration was not in order. And to talk to people, people's voice were changed, completely different, because it is completely ungrounding, being ungrounded, disconnected. Because in 2013, there was earthquake in Italy, and it was 5 point some Richter scale. I felt under my feet like a snake under my feet for 3 months, for 3 months I felt that. I think I have a kind of different sensibility, so I felt it under my feet for 3 months. Now, I cannot imagine people again and again, having the aftershock and the quakes again and again. How people are coping with that? It is a really difficult situation. And in some place, of course, our people started the, not drumming circle, but people started doing the drumming, chanting, prayers, light and the candle and everything, and little by little, little by little, and some theaters were organized in some places, and for children to bring them back. Now, it is still today, is really a very difficult thing. Now here, when this kind of difficult time comes, we all get completely distracted, ungrounded, and like Earth, Mother Earth, the mother Earth who gave birth, who is giving everything to us, when she herself sakes in that way, this time I can really feel how much impact it brings when the earth mother sakes herself. And we say that when the earthquake comes, everything that we have goes away, everything seeps away. And I remember many years ago, there was in 1988, there was an earthquake. It was pretty big, not like this one, but lesser intensity. I remember my elders, when the earthquake came, they stood up and they hold the corn in the hand and they said, "Mero, mero." Mero, mero means it is mine. Don't take away.
Ah.
Yeah. So that was the formula they used to have. It's like a prayer. Mero, 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 mero. So mero, mero means it is mine. Please don't take away. And we have other term. We say rogo, rogo, rogo. Rogo, rogo means it is the word we use when we call back the soul parts to a child. Rogo, 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 rogo. And mero, 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 mero. So to say, it is mine, please don't take away. So when the earthquake happens, everything that has been created by humans, the sacred places, or whatever it may be, everything gets turned upside down or disturbed or goes into in disharmony, not being attuned, just going out of connection. So start the new life after this kind of disastrous earthquake, It's like calling back the earth mother again to her own place. So in some places, people found out that huge snakes, white-colored and yellow-colored snakes, were like outside in the field, that it rarely happens because they have their own sacred abode where they live. But with this earthquake, these sacred serpents, the Nagas, also came out of their sacred abode.
Oh, wow.
So, yes. So it was a very intense thing. So after the earthquake, when the new life starts, then the first thing that we do is we call back the Earth Mother. So we honor the Earth Mother and we request her to come back in her place. And the Nagas, the serpents, are called back. The Earth Mother is called back. Though we say Earth Mother, but Earth Mother, though we say she has masculine aspect also.
Mm-hmm.
So we say Bhumi Raja, Bhumi Raja, Bhumi Raja. So everything has male and female aspect in the creation. So the Earth Mother also has her masculine part. So people, after the 10th day of the death pollution, on the 13th day, on the 45th day after the great earthquake, people kept on doing the prayers and the rituals in their own way, however possible, because the most difficult thing was, you know, every people was outside in the field. Nobody stayed inside the house because the fear that the earthquake comes again, you know, the recurring earthquake. That was so difficult that people could not do anything inside. And you may not believe, 50,000 houses only in the city of Kathmandu have been damaged completely or partially.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. So coming back to our shamanic, I think all these things came together when we spoke about the Earth Mother and the nature and the changes. So coming back to our shamanic practice, then the shamans, through the rituals, invite the Earth Mother back to her own place where she was. So when we do the invocation of inviting the Earth Mother back to her place, we call in the Earth Mother, then the serpent deities, the Nagas, the plant spirits, the animal spirits, human spirits. We call them all together and we request for the harmony. We say there must have been some kind of disharmony between all we living beings. Maybe we did a lot of pollution. Maybe we did not propitiate the things on time. Or maybe living in this land for thousands of years, maybe something went wrong with all this. So we ask for excuse and then we do the ritual, and through chanting, those who do the drumming, those who do not do the drumming, in this way we call back the Earth Mother to our own place and start nurturing us. So this way we call back the Earth Mother. Of course, Earth Mother is never forgotten, but in this kind of difficult times, she and the Nagas are invoked more than anything else. Of course, we need the sun, the stars, there are everything, but these are the things. And the other important thing is that as we get disconnected after this, to get reconnected back to the Earth Mother again, to receive our nurturing, then there is more work to do to get connected with the Earth Mother.
And that's part of the shaman's role, is to lead that conscious healing and calling back to and giving back in that way to the Earth Mother.
So the religious practitioners, the priest, the Hindu Brahmin priest, the monks, they also do the work in their own way, and the shamans also do the work in their own way. So it is a combined effort. It's a combined effort with the participation of the local people by lighting the oil wickers, offering flowers or fruits or the cereals, grains, colored powder, strips of cloth, cow's milk, whatever is available. It's all a vegetarian kind of offering. So we offer that to the Earth Mother. And in some cases, once we do the calling in ceremony, if it is possible, then we plant a tree in that place. And that tree represents our connection with the Earth Mother and our world where we live here and other dimensions. So planting a tree in the place, same place or nearby, wherever it is possible, I think it is a, one of the most beautiful part of honoring the Earth Mother and creating a connection between her and us.
And then we have also a living symbol of that ceremony.
Of course.
To take care of and to honor and to...
Yes, 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 Nika, yes. Yes, so of course we are spiritual all the time. From the time we came here in this reality, and we have a saying, we say that what we are today is what we cultivated after our birth here. What we bring from far off, if we believe that the life continues again and again, there is a cycle of the birth, the death and rebirth again, then what we recollect from our previous experiences, it comes in the form of perfumes. Perfume. So we remember the perfume. Unless the mother gives birth to us, we remember everything. But once we touch the Earth Mother, it's like a trauma, it's like a shock coming to the other reality. Then with the first cry, we forget everything. And what we are is we have created after our birth here. So in this context, in Nepali context, we believe, of course, we believe in the life after death and again, as we talked about before, you know, maybe some of us were our own ancestors once upon a time in other realities, other dimensions. So in Nepali context, the life, the birth, and the death, the cycles is a continuous cycle, and people try to do their best while living. And when a person leaves the body, we try to do as much as possible the after death rituals as much as possible, as well as possible, because we believe that what we do in the earth reality here is like a fuel, is a power for our defunct, our bygone ones. So either from shamanic, like a path, from the shamanic point of view, accompanying or the psychopompic work, or from the traditional religious way of accompanying the death after the transition, are very long Long rituals are very long work that lasts from 13 days, and they are done in the on the 15th day. They are done again on the 45th day. Then they conduct in 6 months' time. Then they do it when it is the year, like the annual remembering. Mm-hmm. Then it continues again and again. So to remember the bygone, we have many rites and rituals, but many of them are connected to our ancestors, the bygone ones, because if we look that from our shamanic perspective, then when an ancestor calls us in the dream reality or in ordinary reality, that means the first call to a shaman in our tradition is the call by the ancestor. Mm-hmm. So when the ancestor calls a neophyte or the progeny, then that ancestor's doors are open first. They are connected to the ancestors first by the clan shaman or the shaman from the same group. Because when the ancestors open the path, they say, okay, then we believe that we are ready to learn, to practice, to open up all different spiritual work or anything that we like to. But unless our ancestors say, okay, we say that we do all that, but it is not opening from the heart. Mm-hmm. It's not from the heart. Because of the heart is considered to be the seat of the ancestors. Uh-huh. Yeah, the heart as the seat, the place of the ancestors. So maybe because of this connection, the so much strong connection with the ancestors, that our death rituals are also really elaborative. They are really elaborated rituals. There is huge participation, and to honor the dead, we put on white colored cloth for 1 year. Wow. Throughout the year, we put on white colored cloth. And if the mother dies, then we don't drink milk for 1 year to honor the mother. So all different things are there. So from shamanic perspective, they call the first thing, the first spirit that calls us is our ancestors. When we, our road, the path to the ancestors are clear, then we start working with the spirits of the nature. Mm-hmm. And we can incorporate the teachings of different lineages or different teachers, different deities or spiritual thing. But first thing is a call by the ancestor. That's why we say, you know, in our traditional shamanic work, first thing is the spirit descend and then they possess. After the possession, once we are healed from the possession, so the possessing agent becomes an inspiration agent. So the difference between possession and inspiration is that possession is something alien to my body. It comes and it may harm me. Mm-hmm. It's too strong. It may harm me. Mm-hmm. It does everything to me. But once we make friendship with that one, then the same spirit becomes a source of inspiration because we created friendship. And when we call, they come in. And when we say thank you, then they go. Mm-hmm. So the ancestral spirit, so when they come, so it is something like when they come, we become their vehicles. We are the vehicles. We are their power animals, we can say.
Mm-hmm. And we give them a way to be here.
And once we work through them, We have the confidence, we create trust, and when there's perfect connection, and thereafter, the spirit will look for a power animal. Then a power animal, a power spirit comes in connection with that ancestral spirit. So, you know, like my understanding is that in some tradition, the first thing that happens is a power animal comes, and after the power animal, the spiritual guide or spirit, whatever, as to that comes later on. But in our traditional way, the first thing that descends is the spirit. They come down, and then later on, they look for a power animal or a vehicle. Mm-hmm. A vehicle to travel with. So ancestral work, connection with the ancestors. So first thing, that's the most important thing. So when we do any kind of healing work, we honor the ancestors first, and we also request the person who needs healing to request the support of their ancestors so that the healing works. Mm-hmm. So the ancestors permit you, grant you permission or the support in the healing process. So this is how we do in our traditional way of working.
That is so beautiful.
Yes, Nika. Yes.
That is so, so beautiful. I would really like to follow that, Bola. I think it might be a nice time to do some drumming and chanting.
Okay.
To really deepen that in people.
Yes.
Because what you have given us is such a gift here to really sit with it. And
so in our traditional drum is called dhyangro. So dhyangro is a Nepali drum, and our Nepali drum has two faces. It is covered from both the sides, and we have the male part, the masculine part, and we have the feminine part. So our drum, we use the male, the masculine part to call in the spirit, and we use the feminine part to thank them or to send them away or to say thank you for being with us. It is covered and it has a handle. The drum has a handle, and the handle of the drum has a universe in it. It is a three-dimensional handle. We see the naga, the serpents, coming out from the lowest level of the earth, and the two nagas are joined together, and they are coming up from the earth, and both the serpents, look opposite to each other. They don't face each other. Because not facing each other, that means they make us so responsible that our work is to bring them together from disharmony to harmony. Yeah. And you can see there is a peacock. Peacock. So peacock as the animal of graciousness. And peacock as the animal that can transmute poison into medicine.
Ah.
Yeah. That's why the shamans use the peacock feather to bring ourselves from not knowing towards knowing, from darkness towards light. That's why in the handle of the drum, there is the figure of the peacock. Then we have the bow and arrow. So the bow and arrow represent the focus, the one-pointedness, not to deviate away from there. Then we have a kalas. Kalas is a sacred vase, the vase where we offer water. And when shamans do the journey work, a part of their soul is kept inside the water container. Yeah, and then we have the trident. So trident as an important instrument, healing instrument, and also the trident represents the fire element. And it also represents the birth, the death, and the rebirth again, continuous cycle of movement, of life. Then we have the middle point where we hold our hands. And then on the top, we have three faces. There are three faces in the hand of the drum. So the three faces represents the lower, middle, and the upper world realms and beyond. And they also represent the three humors. The humor of being very happy, the humor of being sober or in a stable state,
mm-hmm.
and the humor of being a little bit slow. We don't say depressive, but a little bit slow type.
Mm-hmm.
So it is all together here in our drum. And it's the rim of the drum represents the universe. So the shaman holds the drum in front of him, in front of the heart, and he beats the drum. So the shaman, he or she, awakens everything, calls everything to bring everything into harmony, because the shamans or our own body is a universe in microcosmic form. And the drum is the second microcosmic form of the universe. And the shamanic altar that we create is the third microcosmic universe we create. Thereafter, we go beyond. So it is the way. So let me do a little bit of drumming, the rhythm, and sing a little bit songs, the song of harmony and peace.
Gandhi. Lohe, lohe, ayo devo, sato devo noni.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. It was very beautiful.
We are too far.
Yes.
If we were together, you'd have felt better.
Would have felt it, yes.
Whatever it may be, yes.
Yeah, very wonderful.
The gift of communication.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So, the time for our interview has come to an end, Bola. Thank you so much for what you have shared. And how can people find you if they're looking for you?
Oh, people can go to my website at www.nepalese.it.
Okay.
/English.
English. Good idea.
Yeah. So in my work, I don't say I teach, but I share my experiences firsthand, and my path is not to create dependence or anything, but my path is to empower people so they can connect to their own ancestry or the tradition their ancestors had that has been forgotten. So I feel and I am so much convinced that it has been so helpful all these years to share and to support people find their own connection with their land, with their ancestors, with the place, the keepers of the land where they live. And we organize trips to Nepal to work with the shamans in our place. So we do 4, sometimes 5 days intensive shamanic work, and then we go to visit the shamans in their houses to receive healing, to observe their healing work, how they do the healing, and to make some interviews sometimes to the shamans or to the people who go to see the shamans. We visit the sacred places and power places, and we do the ceremonies. So that's what we have been doing for many years, and we continue doing that. And if people go to see in the website, the courses, the classes are 7-8 different categories, different types of classes, and people can choose what type of classes or the sharing they would like to organize. On the basis of that, I travel and then I share my work. I love like 5 days or 3 days work, then 1 day or 2 days. Of course, we need short time work also, because that helps people to understand something.
Right.
And of course, longer time is of course better. And now these days, since 2 months, we are completely involved to help the people with the earthquake relief in Nepal. And by the trust of our friends, of the people all over the world, we have been able to generate about $35,000-$40,000 so far. And we already sent the money down there, and our people have bought the zinc or corrugated zinc seats for people to make the temporary shade there. From this week, we'll be making more houses, and of course, to say, you know, that the destruction is so big that there is a lot of need necessary. The donor countries are helping Nepal, but we all know that the big helpers help go to some big things, but the local people, the village people, are always under the shadow. So the places which are under the shadow, under the umbra, you know, the little help reaches there. So we are trying to help people who are being overshadowed, or we can say in the dark part where the help doesn't need. And we are trying to create a trust to help the children who lost their parents, or the parents who lost their job or the houses. So we're trying to create an educational trust after the emergency is over. We are trying to create a trust to help children go to school.
Wonderful.
To sponsor a child for many years becomes difficult for some people, to take one child to sponsor from distance.
Right.
So instead of that one, we like people that if they donate, then we create a fund, and we use that fund money to help buy cloth or pay the school fee or buy some like dresses or the pen or pencil or tuition classes. So, you know, we can help more number of people if we create a trust. If we take one child, then we are focused only on that one. And what about the other? So we're trying to make the help more broader. So thank you, Nika, for giving this opportunity to talk to you, and thank you for listening. I hope it has some meaning on our work.
It has been a great gift, Bola. Thank you so much.